This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com with Pete Sampson and Tim O'Malley. I am Tim Priester. It is Monday, December 5th. We are back from last week with plenty to talk about. We have the Final Four chosen for the college football playoffs. It would appear that Brian Kelly is back for sure with Jack Swarbrick's comments from last week. Sure. Possibility of transfers and staff rumors, basketball playing well. Where do you guys want to start? I think we should. Where do you want to start?
Basketball.
No.
Jack Swarbrick. For those who haven't read the site or sort of listened to the podcast, I mean, it was an internal media piece that Jack Swarbrick put out with Jack Nolan. It basically tackled most of the questions that I think a journalist would have of Swarbrick. But I mean, I think the main take is that Swarbrick is adamant that Brian Kelly is coming back and feels like the program is actually in good shape, which is really runs counter to, I think, most fan sentiment out there today. I thought Swarbrick made a bunch of good points just about how there are quite a few people who are dismissive of 2015 and 2012 because 2016 was so bad. Which I get. That's fine. But I think sort of on its own merits, you have to look at Brian Kelly as a 7-year project, not a 2-year project. I don't think that saying, well, we have to look at this as a two-year project is any more representative than
14 and
than 4 years or 1 year. It's look at the full 7 years. You look at the full 7 years, 51 and 39. I went through all Power Five teams. There are about 60. There are 65 of them. Notre Dame is 20th, and if being 20th is okay, I guess, if 20th is not reason to write a $10 million plus check and blow up the whole project, that I can, I'll get behind that. But I think to sit there and say that everything is great and, you know, it's just not about wins and losses, some of that I think is going to irk quite a bit of the fan base.
I think the business as usual thing probably bothers people, but I will say this. The coaches are out recruiting right now. There's not going to be any staff movement in terms of probably, as Pete mentioned, until after the coaches clinic in January in Nashville.
No, I would say this is going to come way before that, but I think you're definitely going to get through this weekend with the award show before.
Yeah, and you're getting past, I don't think you hear an announcement about Notre Dame firing coach.
No, until the next guy is hired.
Right. So I think when Jack Swarbrick goes up there and says, you know, it's business as usual and everything's going on, it's not like he can talk about all the inner changes that are kind of starting to happen.
Yeah.
He can't bring that up.
The business as usual quote I saw referenced in a few headlines, that was not really the big takeaway from that for me. I think business as usual is, while I'm sitting down and talking to Brian Kelly after the season, just like every other season, that makes sense. But I think people sort of took that and then it's, ends up in a headline and you think, well, wait, 4-8 is business as usual. That's not really his point.
No, it's not. And, you know, I hear what you're saying about, you know, Jack Swarbrick saying that the program's in good shape. I mean, did he actually use that term?
Yeah, I don't know if he said good shape, but I know a lot of good things happening.
Right, and I know where he's coming from there. He's not talking about 4-8 and losing and that. He's talking about the foundation of the program.
Yeah, the program is in good shape are his exact words.
Okay, all right. So he's talking about the foundation of the program that he himself, Jack Swarbrick, helped create.
Right.
Right? And so I understand where he's coming from there, but when people hear good shape and business as usual, there's going to be a negative reaction to the point where people want to take out ads and billboards and
plus,
things
I think
like that.
People only wanted to hear one thing. It was going to be said.
Right, exactly. So, it wasn't that. Well. He didn't say that.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought his defense of Brian Kelly was fine. But again, you're 20th. You have the exact same record as Kansas State over the last 7 years. I don't think you can just ignore that. You're when you bring up Stanford, as Swarbrick did in the interview, I don't think Notre Dame is close to Stanford.
Not even close.
Stanford has won, I think they're at 69. They've won 10 more games than Notre Dame over the last 7 years. That's a huge number. They've won 3 major bowls and participated in 5. Notre Dame has played in 2 and lost both. So if you want to say that Stanford is proof that you can win while achieving high academics, that's great. It is proof. But I think then you need to be like, wait a minute, why aren't we doing that? Because I think that's where Notre Dame really falls short right now. In terms of the questions, or at least one question that if I was talking to Jack Swarbrick, I would have asked that Jack Nolan didn't, and I understand why this didn't come up, is to get more into the recruiting aspect and Brian Kelly's involvement of that, because I think you look at Notre Dame's recruiting overall, and Swarbrick would easily and smartly say, well, how are Stanford's classes ranked? Because they're much worse than ours. But I do think that Notre Dame needs to have a better recruiting effort from the head coach than what they have right now. It's more of a CEO operation and let the assistants do the job. I think Brian Kelly could be and should be more involved there.
I would agree with that. And a couple other things that I thought were interesting, staff changes. Jack Swarbrick talked about the defensive coordinator. A lot of things will flow from that. So I think that's a good sign. If they go out and get a coordinator from outside, it sounds like they will allow him to bring in the people that he wants to bring in. I think that's a good thing. Another thing that he said that I thought was good was, yeah, it's harder to win, but it doesn't make any difference. He says it's harder to win in basketball. You know, he makes a direct correlation to, to what Mike Bray is doing with his program. So, you know, those are all positive signs. The fact of the matter is you're still bringing back a coach that went 4-8. But he talks about the 2015 season, and it, you know, look, if you don't have an inadvertent face mask penalty against Isaac Rochelle at the end of the Stanford game, you're probably 11-1 last year, which makes it a really special year because you beat somebody good on the road. They haven't beat, you know, I mean, and so they had it. Good wins, important wins, meaningful wins have been really hard to come by, but they didn't get that. They lost that game. So, I mean, he also said there's no magic number for next year for Brian Kelly. And again, I understand from an administrator standpoint why he's saying that. He's not going to go into a season and put a number on it like we tend to do. And yet, there probably has to be a bare minimum, right, going into next year to some extent.
Swarbrick is way too smart then to be yes, he needs to go.
I understand why he's not going. He's not going to put a number on it. Yeah, I understand
And nor should there be, like, even privately a number.
Right.
He doesn't even have a number in his head. He's just like, well, this is how the season went, and I'm going to evaluate it in the season. I mean, I think it would be interesting. Like, look, if they have a 2015 or a 2012, awesome. Keep it going. If you have a 2013...
That's 9-4, 8-4 regular season.
Probably that's okay. Probably.
Well, it's what they normally are, because the regular season, look, Brian Kelly's 3-3 in bowl games. So we can throw that out right now because the regular season's kind of the judgment here.
Right.
In the bowl games, if you want to say, why am I not counting the bowl games? First of all, it's a 500 record, so you don't need to count it. Secondly, he lost, if you're ranking the bowl games, he lost 1-2-4. And 1-3-5-6 in terms of importance. I'm giving the Music City Bowl a bump over the Florida State loss because they absolutely 100% had to win that game, and they somehow did. So he's usually lost his better bowl games. But if you take those games out, he is a 56-win coach over 7 years, which is the definition of an 8-win regular season coach.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking at because, look, 9-4 beating someone like Florida State in a bowl game, really cool. Beating Rutgers, doesn't matter.
I'm retracting 2013. For some reason, I thought they finished 9-3 that year.
Okay, no.
And
they were
Pittsburgh saying was like four, the garbage lot. Forget it.
That's not good. So 5 out of the 7 seasons.
Yeah, I think 5 out of the 7 seasons would precipitate a change.
Let's address the playoff contenders. Alabama, of course, finishing first. Clemson second. They are in. They just slipped in. Alabama won, Clemson and Ohio State flip-flopping because Clemson won the ACC and Ohio State didn't play. And then Washington holding serve with a convincing win over Colorado, leaving Penn State with 2 losses and Michigan with 2 losses sitting in the number 5 and 6 spots. This is the third year of the playoffs, correct? Third year. In my opinion, I think they've worked out pretty damn well all 3 years.
You just explained why the playoff work perfectly, because the 2 teams that are in 5 and 6 that had good years have 2 losses.
Exactly.
The teams that had really good years in front of them had 1 loss.
Like, I know we give blue ribbons to everybody that finishes second through 120th, but the fact of the matter is there are 4 spots, and Penn State's number 5 and Michigan's number 6, and I personally agree with that.
Look, when Notre Dame lost their second game last year, and they lost 2 games in the last second, no Notre Dame fan in the world thought, man, I can't believe we're not in over one loss Oklahoma. Yeah. I really felt like we should get in over them. No, you lost two, so you're not in. Everyone knew that.
Yeah, I felt like Pete has a different perspective.
I was going to say, like, the discussion of, like, should Penn State be in? What about Michigan? Felt very, like, inauthentic to me. Like, it felt like a national media be like, well, we have to talk about something and make this kind of controversial.
The last couple of weeks of the regular season, I heard arguments for USC being in. They lost three times.
Yes.
Okay, look, if you're going to start talking about that, first of all, I don't want to hear about 18 playoff because then you're including all kind of 2 and 3 lost teams in the conversation.
Who is number 8? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
I don't know who it is, but Alabama 59, number 8-0.
So there's no sense in playing that. But if we're going to start disregarding losses, let's not even keep score. Let's play 12 60-minute games, and at the end of those 12 60-minute games, let's have a committee sit down and say, I think they're the best. They're the best. We don't have wins and losses to judge it by, but they're the best. They're the best. They're the best. They're the best. Those are the teams that
I'd have gotten 9-4 Notre Dame on that playoff if I was on that committee right there.
8th is Wisconsin, by the way.
Yeah, 59-0.
Yeah,
okay. A mistake.
I thought they were fine. Those four teams were fine. I don't even know what the argument would be for Penn State or Michigan at this point. I liked the precedent that it set for Notre Dame as well. Ohio State won it as not only a conference non-champion, but they only played 12 games.
So now the Big 12 is saying, why are we scheduling a championship game next year? We don't need it.
Big 12. Run by
because morons. Because you're an inferior conference, that's why.
Now, I think that you could look at Washington's schedule. I think they play Rutgers, Portland State, and Idaho maybe in their non-conference. Oh. They just got lucky. They got lucky at 12-1. If there was another
one loss
that Washington team would be out. Like, so if Penn State had beaten Pittsburgh,
exactly,
which would have been a quality win,
or Michigan had lost to Iowa,
then Washington would be out, and I wouldn't have a problem with that either.
Right.
But I think from Notre Dame perspective, the precedent is good. You don't that this mystical 13th game, like you have to play a 13th game.
The thing is, it doesn't matter. If Washington schedules Missouri and NC State, which they probably beat both, right? Yeah. Anyway, it's not even a question. So Washington shouldn't be. Did they really think that they weren't they just didn't think they were going to be as good as they are?
Well, I mean, they may have made these schedules when Tyrone Willingham was a coach.
Well, that's true. I don't know how.
Maybe they thought Rutgers was not going to
I don't
be.
Know how they, yeah. I mean,
you
I'm sure they do
it. 3 years out, right?
Yeah, I guess
just
so.
Just look at another name. It's
yeah, I mean, Chris Peterson might not even have been the coach at that point.
I'm sure he wasn't, actually. I've only heard how Notre Dame schedules are constructed. Yeah. I don't hear how everyone else is. Or the timetable.
Sadly, Washington's conference next year is at Rutgers. Montana and Fresno State.
They got a home and home with Rutgers. Huh?
Yes, that's a home good. And home with Rutgers.
Hey, it's a Big Ten
They're
team.
Big Ten team.
They are a Big Ten team.
All sorts of coaches would point that out. We like the playoff. News in Notre Dame, outside of Brian Kelly returning, Malik Zaire not, as we reported last week. Corey Holmes not over the weekend. John Mathis as well, which I think we had referenced multiple times on the podcast. Holmes, and we had said this on last week's podcast, there will be at least one transfer. You're like, oh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Corey Holmes is, oh, didn't see that coming. Now, he's the 8th receiver on the team, so I don't think it's something to get too broken up about, or it's not going to impact the offense next year. But, I mean, he did get a lot of time at USC.
He was targeted 10 times last week.
A lot of fun with that one. 10 targets at USC. Tell it, Tim. Yeah, I was doing the musings today. 10 targets for Holmes at USC. He had previously been targeted 10 times.
In his career.
Notre Dame. So this, I mean, yeah, if he had a sit down like every player does with Brian Kelly, I'm sure Brian Kelly didn't promise him a starting job because there isn't one.
Corey Holmes was quoted as saying, I believe it was the South Bend Tribune, that, you know, he wants to be a number one receiver and he didn't see it happening in Notre Dame. Well, it's not. I was complimentary of Holmes. I thought he was making progress during the season when they did throw to him prior to the USC game. When they did throw to him, he made some decent plays, some important plays. But, you know, you're not it's not because Notre Dame is doing something wrong and not making you the number one target. You don't catch the football consistently enough to be a number one at any school other than a lower echelon. If you want to go to a lower echelon school, I'm sure they can elevate you right away.
He has 2 years of eligibility left. He is a sophomore redshirt in 2015, and he's going to graduate, so he has 2 years to play somewhere else right away. Good if that works out well
for him. Yeah, look, I mean, if he ends up at USF or UCF, I think in the next 2 years, he'll have 100 catches.
Over the 2 years, yeah.
He's going to drop too many passes to have 100 catches.
I think Will Fuller dropped a few of them as well. Malik Zaire.
And thus ends the Corey Holmes, Will Fuller comparison for the afternoon.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, he was a guy when he came in, I don't know, Tim, you felt this way, but I watched his tape and I was like TJ Jones with a little bit of extra stuff happening. And I mean,
but, you know,
it
we
just
don't,
never happened.
It's so hard. We've got a film review today, which I haven't had one in a while, but on Josh Pascal and how important his Notre Dame. Look, we get snippets, you know, I try to study as much as I can. But I don't know how many passes Corey Holmes dropped in high school, but probably a fair share
if it's continued.
Look at our highlight tape of Josh Pascal today. Everybody in the country is going to want him after watching that tape. And he is good. He is a good player.
Malik Zaire, I caught up with his family last week. North Carolina and Pittsburgh likely to get visits this week. Michigan State still involved. And then Florida. The presumption around the family is that if he had his choice of all schools, it would be Florida. But the SEC is a little bit more complicated in terms of their fifth-year graduate transfer rule. Everett Golson kind of got caught up in that last year and ended up at Florida State in the ACC. But North Carolina would be really, really interesting. For people that are like, North Carolina, what's the connection down there? Interestingly enough, Mitch Trubisky, their quarterback, likely to go pro this week, is from Ohio and knows Zaire, actually won Mr. Football in the state of Ohio when Zaire was there. So there is some connection there. Mitch Trubisky was also picked off by Sean Crawford in high school.
Symmetry again.
But if Trubisky goes pro, then I think that would be a good landing spot for Zaire, and he's going to visit this week to find out. And if that happens,
you know he's playing against Notre Dame next year, man. You just know it.
In a home game, too.
We'll see Malik Zaire on Notre Dame's football schedule next year.
It would be a lot more fun if it was in South Bend, but either one would be a road game, it seems.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think when people hear Michigan say, like, oh, I can't go to Michigan State, and then there's almost like they haven't quite looked at the schedule to see that North Carolina's on it. Man, that would be something to see.
It's going to happen. You know, Malik Zaire also said, I think I'm the best quarterback in the country. Okay.
Well, he wasn't this year.
Yeah.
But I really want him to go to North Carolina.
I mean,
okay. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Next year's schedule. Let's get... You open with Temple, Matt Rhule, who I think we all look at as like, wow, that's a really good head coach. Next, you got Jacob Eason. Notre Dame legacy. Dad played for Lou Holtz. Later, you've got Chuck Martin
a few weeks later,
and that is immediately followed by Malik Zaire at North Carolina. I mean, holy cow. In a year where you have to win big, there is a lot happening. There's a lot happening on that schedule next year, especially if Malik Zaire.
Talk about the excitement.
Man, there would be a lot of excitement.
There would be a lot of excitement.
Yeah. Just to get back to Notre Dame in the bowl.
They would have qualified
at 5-7 based on their APR score this year. So they really were one win away from getting a bowl invite. And if they, because those bowls pick by APR, they don't really have a choice. Notre Dame actually would have ended up in the St. Pete Bowl, most likely, against Miami, Ohio, and Chuck Martin.
Yeah, but
on December 26th.
Can't really be expected to beat Duke at home to get into a bowl game.
it really tamped down the excitement about the Miami of Ohio meeting next year if they played in a bowl game.
Wow, that would
be
interesting. See Chuck Martin this year.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun. But yes, they would have made it at 5-7 this year, which I had said was highly unlikely, but turned out that it worked out that way. Coaching staff rumors, I guess we talked about that a little bit. Defensive coordinator...
That's the domino, because if there's a new coordinator, there's a lot of changes, probably. And if there's not, there's probably just a couple tweaks.
Right? Yeah, Sorbrick said probably not wholesale changes, but if the defense coordinator comes in and says, I'd like to do some wholesale changes, then they're going to do wholesale changes. I don't know what that's going to mean for the defensive staff, but you would think I think Mike Elko is interesting for a lot of reasons, but one of them is just fit because he's more defensive back focused. Maybe that helps Todd Light stay on staff moving forward as he sort of grows into the position and Notre Dame finds out what they have there. Maybe it helps Mike Elston stay there if he doesn't move over to tight end special teams type of role that
He's on staff, though, next year, Mike Elston. Like, that's about as
It's hard to imagine him not.
Right. Unless he took a job, unless he elevated himself.
Right. You know, it's in Mike Sanford will... Mike Sanford every year is going to have opportunities to leave Notre Dame if he wants to. I think this is an offseason where he could go to Brian Kelly and be like, look, I want to call plays. If I don't, if I can't round out my resume as a future head coach that doing it here, then maybe I need to do it somewhere else. I'll be very curious to see what happens with him and his role.
That has to be done.
It has to be.
I think we said this, I said this last week. I mean, if he walks out the door never having called plays for Notre Dame,
and it's not that hard for Brian Kelly to make a change with his friend that they went 4-8 with Mike Denbrock calling plays and Brian Kelly chiming in. So why not make the change?
Yeah.
It's not like you're, it's not like you say, "Hey, we went 9-4, and our offense averaged 550 yards a game." That didn't happen.
Yeah. So. And you know, a lot you can attribute a lot of that to the defense, but the offense didn't come through when they had to in so many instances. So
yeah. A potential staff reshuffling. I'm curious, you guys think about. So Scott Booker leaves as special teams tight ends. Mike Sanford becomes a true offensive coordinator calling the plays. Mike Denbrock absorbs tight ends at wide receiver.
Right.
Mike Elston, if the new defensive coordinator wants to just go, I have all my own guys, then give Elston special teams a recruiting coordinator.
He was the special teams coordinator when he got here.
Yeah.
And he was the special teams coordinator for Cincinnati, so he's right. Well-versed in it. He was kind of blamed for bad special teams at the beginning because of the just the ludicrous punt return situation.
Yeah.
But it was they were also
very... doesn't sound that bad now, does it?
No, it doesn't sound that terrible. Used to fair catch punts.
Yeah.
But they were really segmented back then, though. He was called... That wasn't his real job title, special teams coordinator, but he kind of was the guy.
Every assistant had a...
Yeah, and it was really segmented. Like I think Booker's more in charge of it than before, like Bob Diaco worked with just the punters and Alford was just the return men. It was a really strange way of doing things. I remember Brian Kelly even said, you know, he's no longer the coordinator, but this is not a Mike Elston problem. This was on all of us, and this just frees up Mike to do stuff. So I think he will go back to being special teams coordinator, actually.
I think that would be a decent staff mix.
And if it's not him, I read something and I agree with somebody on our message board. You know who else could be the special teams coordinator if he has the staff in place the way he wants it? Is Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly can be in charge of the special teams all the way through August and be in charge of the special teams.
He won't be.
Lou Holtz was 100% in charge of his special teams.
Lou Holtz, Brian Kelly.
I'm just telling you that if you want to save your coaching career and you have Mike Sanford handling it and calling plays and you trust Mike Denbrock to be doing a game plan, who better than to save your special teams?
You're saying it's a good idea.
No, I'm saying that it would be a good thing for him to do. He's the head coach, and he says no one wants to be on special teams. We have sometimes it's like pulling teeth. This year it wasn't like pulling teeth. We changed the culture
like
around.
Like Urban Meyer does.
Like Urban Meyer does.
It's not going to happen, Tim.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. Right. I'm saying it would be good.
And every year we hear people want to be on special teams this year. Every single year. Now, 2 years after the fact, when he retroactively describes as special teams, that's when you get pulling teeth. So I don't buy that for a second.
Last year I think they wanted to be on it. The whole Farley thing.
It's either got to be Elston or somebody new from the outside. But I do think there's a way to have a dedicated special teams coach now next year. Denbrock has coached tight ends before. The way they run the tight ends is not... You can split those guys between Heistand and the receivers. Right.
They're Heistand's guys as blockers.
I think that would be Denbrock's
guys as in the slot. Yeah. So
I think there's a solution there to sort of create... a dedicated special teams coach if you really want to. Do we want to talk about basketball?
Yeah,
we're playing the number one team in the country on Saturday. Notre Dame is playing the number one team in the country on Saturday. Villanova, defending national champs.
You got to get past Fort Wayne.
They're still playing number one Villanova. They're tricky. No matter what. Yeah, Fort Wayne, for people that don't know, beat Indiana.
Yeah, Mike Bray and the four leaders of the team last night would not take the bait of me trying to get them to talk about the next three-game segment, which is Fort Wayne that beat Indiana, and Villanova, which now moves up to number one because Kentucky got beat. I think they only lost by 5, but UCLA handled them.
At Kentucky.
And then Purdue the following, at Kentucky, yeah. And then Purdue the following Saturday. But none of them want to talk about that. Fort Wayne's a little tricky for them. You know, we're going to know an awful lot more about this team over the next three games, which is going to span 2 weeks because you have final exams mixed in between Villanova and Purdue.
No way they sweep these three games, right?
I wouldn't think so.
It'd be good to go one. If you beat Villanova, you can lose to Purdue. It's not like football where you get dinged. If you beat, you're probably gonna be what 21st when the poll comes out today for the first time they'll be ranked. Oh, yeah. Whatever, 22nd we'll say. Time. You beat Villanova, you're number 10. Number one Villanova. And then you lose to Purdue, you drop.
But if
one.
You saw Purdue play Louisville, you obviously believe that Purdue's more people than
no. But I'm saying Villanova, if you beat Villanova in college basketball as an undefeated team, you get such a jump.
Oh,
in the polls. Yeah. That it would be. You could go ahead and lose. Well,
the thing
game.
Is, though, you beat Villanova, you got a week. You got a week, a full week to prepare for Purdue, so it gives you a chance to, you know, climb down off the emotions right. of that. And but four win home, late game Tuesday night, we'll see. But we won't know really what we've got until what they have until Villanova. Did I just say we?
Yeah.
Until Villanova.
You Purdue. Love your
I don't
hoops.
Ever say that. Yeah. I don't ever say yeah. that.
Well, regardless, we'll probably be talking about more Notre Dame hoops on the podcast this year because they're a sort of surprising, interesting story with the job Mike Bray is doing there and bringing guys along. So that's it for segment one on Irish Illustrated Insider. We've got a bunch of questions you might imagine on segment two, so all that next. To Irish Illustrated Insider, segment two, Burning Up the Boards, the first from T.M. Pollard. Based upon Pete's statistical analysis post on Sunday, are you surprised or disappointed there are 20-plus teams who have had a better run over these 7 years of the Brian Kelly tenure? What are the biggest reasons for your answer? Well, I think one way you have to look at this is if you take out 4-8, like the total faceplant of the season, I think Notre Dame would actually be 14th. Over a six-year span among Power 5 teams in winning. And I think it's fine. Like, I think you would take that and be like, if you're Notre Dame, yeah, great. We'll take that. That means we're going to have a couple seasons where things really bubbled up. And we're going to have some 8-win, 9-3 type seasons. And, you know, we'll take that. So I think that's okay. Because in the last, this year, Notre Dame fell behind due to the 4-8. They fell behind Auburn, A&M, Louisville, Nebraska, Baylor was about even. They fell behind USC this year.
Say they were about 8-4, they would have been around yeah. 15, 16.
I mean, if they had been 8-4, they'd probably be 14th okay. Again. They actually, you know what, I think they probably would have gotten past Baylor. They could have been 13th. So just an average season, you're inside the top 15 just barely. And I think that's okay. I mean, I know that might like, upset some fans who be like, oh, Notre Dame needs to be top five. Well, they're not. They need to be consistently top 10 before they can try to be top five. Because, I mean, you look at the top five. Alabama, over the last 7 years, is averaging more than 12 wins a year. That is just a mind-blowing win total for you. They have 85 wins in the last 7 years. And then you've got Ohio State, Clemson, Florida State, and Oklahoma. I don't think Notre Dame is positioned to really be in that group. Oregon actually is ahead of Oklahoma. They're trending down big time. So
not if you take out their 4-8.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they're great. So you look at where Notre Dame is right now, 59-31. Are they, under Brian Kelly, ever going to be in a situation where they would be 79-13 over a seven-year span? Absolutely not. That's where Ohio State is right now. But Michigan State is 68-25 with a complete dog year this year. They were actually 65-16. You know, over 7 years, I think you need to be averaging 9 wins a year.
Yes.
You know, be in the 64, 65, you know, 9.2 wins a year. And Notre Dame is, they're not that far away from that. But after this year, it certainly feels that way.
I do, you know, we've talked about 8-5 or 5 loss teams. I do think that's a demarcation, 9-4 and 8-5. If you're 9-4, you have twice as many wins as losses.
And it might be a 3-loss regular season, which is really good.
Right.
Compared to a 4-loss
right,
regular season.
Right. To me, that's the cutoff. And so what, we've had, there have been three out of seven.
7-5, 8-4, 12-0.
Yeah, 3 out of 7 such seasons is...
Yeah, it's
not
enough.
It's not enough. It's not enough. I think by anybody's standards for Notre Dame, that's not enough.
And I think even if you were to take, it's hard to factor in a 4-8, but even if you were to throw in one more where they're contended like last year. Last year was a really good team, but let's say they just went 10-3 following that 12-1 season. I mean, it's one win, but you if you're a contender 3 out of 7 years and a true contender, they're the number one team in the country, it's so much better than 2 out of 7 years. And the 4-8 is just very hard to reconcile for fans, for me, for many people. 4-8 it's so out of character from what you could ever expect from a Notre Dame team that has anything.
Well, when you consider, 4-8, you lost home games to Duke and Virginia Tech.
2-4 at home.
Yeah, I mean, you should be 4-2 at home, or whether it's, you know, a bad Michigan State team, I guess, instead of Virginia Tech, which I was on their bandwagon all year. You lost to Texas and Navy away from your stadium. You can't do it.
Yeah, you just lost can't all do it. Not
a, not, yeah, if it was a 9-3 Texas team, I understand, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it's tough because we have so much to cover with a 9-month period of the Kelly era right now. And I started writing about this morning. Do you take, if you want to take 2-year samples, as Pete said, you got to take a 7-year sample, but don't you have to break that up a little too? Like I did a lot this morning on Monday Music, I just broke it in half to see where he's trending. You can, where he's been since midway, it gives him a really good year last year. It takes away the 12-win year. It's hard to do a 7-year sample because none of those players exist anymore. He didn't recruit, and I hate this argument, but none of the guys that went to...
But you're going
to
use it.
I am, because they're all gone. I mean, like, the 12-win team could not be more gone.
Explain for everyone the general downward trend that has occurred here.
Yeah, it's if you just cut Brian Kelly's 7 seasons in half, so it's 90 games, you look at it 45, okay? I threw out the bowl games because they're 3-3 in all the bowl games. The bowl games are incidental. You lost to a great team, you beat a bad team, whatever. Notre Dame was 31-12 under Kelly in the first 7 seasons, regular seasons. I mean...
Thumbs up.
Then 25-17. We're talking the first 6 games of the last 6 games. So he always... Not always, but he's 31-12 in the first 6 games, 25-17. So that's getting worse. If you divide it by months, roughly by months, so quarters, 19-9, the first 4 games, that's basically September. 21-7, middle 4, basically October. 15-13. In November, over 7 years. And that's after a 10-1 start.
Yeah, the November collapses have been troubling.
Troubling because the goal is to get better. But that was my point of the first 6 versus last 6. They're worse even at the middle 6 games. If you divide it exactly down the middle, he was 32-13, and he's 27-18 since. All these add up a little bit, including 28 true road games, 10-4, which is excellent, 4-10 since. Which is really troubling because they have 5 true road games next year. Yeah. They have no neutral site games, and it does matter that they... I mean, he's very good at neutral site games. They generally play... It's usually a bowl game or a bad team, but he's very good at neutral site games. And even home games, it's kind of a wash. He was 16-5 in his first 21 home games. He's 15-7 since. Neither one of those are great. I guess you could take 16-5 and be 32-10 at home. That would look a lot better.
Yeah, it's just like, so, I mean, you look at the teams that Notre Dame is sort of in the peer group of 59-31, Nebraska, Auburn, Georgia, A&M, USC.
Auburn seems better than
they've all fired a coach.
Yeah. Well.
They've all fired a coach. USC has fired a couple. So, Notre Dame hasn't. Michigan is about to match them if they win their bowl game against Florida State. They fired a coach. There's clearly these other programs have made pretty hard course correction changes, and Notre Dame has not. I'm not advocating that this is Notre Dame should not do anything with Brian Kelly because Auburn did something with Gene Chizik. That's stupid. But just you look at the landscape right now, there's the teams at the top who haven't figured out Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida State, Oklahoma, Stanford. Somehow Wisconsin has won 70 games in the last 7 years with multiple coaches. It's okay to be stable up there, but if you're trying to knock into that group, the precedent is out there for other schools that you make a change.
Don't you think that, I mean, we didn't talk about this, but, and I understand, a lot of people want to change. Just fire them. They don't care really who the alternative is. Just fire them. Don't you think that Jack Swarbrick studied the alternatives?
Yes.
And said, we're not going to make this change. Now, I look at this as this year's alternatives are next year's alternatives. It's not Meyer, Harbaugh, Saban. It wasn't Tom Herman. He wasn't going to come to Notre Dame.
Yeah, the only job out there where you're like, a piece could be taken off the puzzle table now that you get bites you next year is Oregon. And I have no idea what Oregon is going to do. I don't know if Oregon has any idea what Oregon is. But like, Jack Swarbrick is incredibly smart. He's an attorney. And he wouldn't just go into the courtroom and be like, I object to what? I don't know. I just wanted to object. Like, I just wanted to fire this guy. Like, you have to have a next move mapped out. You have to have
if you make that call, you've made a minimum of a 3-year decision.
Right.
That's what I think, though.
And if you don't, and so you're not happy with the alternatives that you see, you don't want to pull the trigger and make a 3-year mistake, whereas now, at worst, you're making a 1-year mistake.
Yeah, you'd be making a three. So
not at worst, a 1-year mistake. Well, making a 1-year mistake. You might be accepting purgatory at most, is what I mean.
You're making a 1-year mistake.
Then. Yeah. At the expense, you can make a 3-year mistake that costs you, $25 million? Or you can make a 1-year mistake that costs you $0 in terms of coaching contract. Now, revenue and fundraising and ticket sales, I get all that. It's hard to figure out what impact Brian Kelly is going to have coming back is going to have on that. It won't be a positive, but it's hard to really sort of quantify what the negative would be.
Do you think he really wants to see more from his top two candidates? We keep saying Matt Rhule and McIntyre. I mean,
sure.
Is it something where he needs to see more from Matt Rhule? Do you need to see more from Matt Rhule?
Well, you're going to.
Yeah, I was going to say
you're going to in the opener next year. Yeah. They beat the crap out of Navy on Saturday. That's a pretty good check in the plus column for Matt Rhule.
He lost his whole defense, and they won 10 games again this year.
Yeah,
they lost almighty number 5 Penn State by 3.
They were top 6 in
lost Army in the opener.
Top That's 6 amazing. In yards per play allowed, I think, on the year with the other 4. Playoff teams and Penn State. So, I mean, the guy knows what he's doing.
Could you
roll the dice on him right now?
Yes. My point.
Could you roll the dice right now on McIntyre? Yes. Now, Matt Rhule, you're going to learn a ton about him next year because he's not going to have a 4-year starting quarterback come back. That's a different kind of rebuild. Now, he's already done the defensive rebuild and it's looked pretty good. But
that's tougher at Temple to do a defensive rebuild, too.
Yeah,
entire unit.
Yeah, both those guys, it doesn't look like they're moving. I think that's good news for Notre Dame, whether it works out for Brian Kelly and they go 10-2 next year or it doesn't. It's good to have options.
Okay, yeah, why is Matt Rhule not moving then?
That's what I don't get. Why is he not moving? That's because Oregon's
still where.
I don't know.
Next year he could move instead of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, at that point, look, you just have to bite the bullet on that.
Wouldn't Matt Rhule look well?
He turned down Missouri last year.
Okay. So wouldn't he look attractive to Oregon? Maybe not because their identity is offense
and they've struggled, he's all East Coast.
Yeah.
Right. McIntyre would though.
Yeah.
But you would think McIntyre would want to be like, okay, let's do this. I want one more year of something good here. After this,
Depends on how much more money you're offered to go to Oregon.
Yeah.
Than
that's
maintaining
true
at Colorado.
I mean, you think Colorado, look, Power 5 jobs kind of all pay the same unless you're Nick Saban. Everyone's making your $4 to $5 million a year, and if you have job security, that's probably worth more than rolling the dice on a total rebuild.
And I don't know that everybody understands. My oldest brother lives in Eugene, Oregon. That's a different world out there, man. That is a different world. So, you see Oregon's success, but Eugene is not. I mean, I don't know what people think about South Bend, but Eugene, Oregon is very, very different. The facilities are great. That is great. And it's a beautiful area to live. You got the ocean, you got the mountains. It's awesome. I've been there many times, but a different kind of cat
Boulder's
exists
okay.
out
yeah,
there.
Boulder's not bad. So that's a nice little.
Yeah, Boulder's not a place I think people are running to move out of.
Yeah.
So I think Mike McIntyre's, let's just see how next year goes.
So that was from TM Pollard's question about your statistical analysis.
Did you want to know how Colorado is over the last 7 years? Because they're 29.
Should
58.
We go on to the next question?
Sure.
Go ahead, Tim.
Irish Eye was tailgating. In retrospect, Given the talent on the 2016 roster and the relatively weak schedule, what should Notre Dame's record have been?
Okay, that's what gets me back to I was ahead of myself a little bit here. I mean, 8-4. I don't think 8-4 was unreasonable. I predicted 9-3. I've kind of said that I was leaning towards 8-4. I don't know if I ever really said that.
You did. You said back it to us, at least. Okay. I can vouch for you. You were a game below Pete and I when you were doing your thing the whole
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day of the old 100 hunches, I clearly would have stated I'm leaning more towards 8-4 than better. But
well, I can
thank
vouch
God
for
we don't have those anymore.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this in the preseason. You know, how would we view 9? I think 9-3 was sort of like a push. If you had an over-under win total and the over-under was set at 9, and you bet 9, you wouldn't win any money. Obviously, you would have lost. But I do think 9-3 would have felt like, okay, that's okay plus. It is interesting looking at Brian Kelly's 7 years here. They've never had a 9-3 regular season. But this felt like this should have been the first one.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the schedule, they played one team better than them, and it's at USC. They played Virginia Tech, Stanford, Navy. I'll just say Virginia Tech and Stanford kind of peers, right? Virginia Tech, Stanford. Sure. Navy's a very good team that could be hard to beat. So Navy is next in that line. I know Michigan's, and then I think after that, you don't have anything. You do have road games. The Texas road game was not an easy situation to go into.
No, it wasn't.
NC State's a toss-up because of the weather. Michigan, I feel like I'm making excuses, but I'm not really. Michigan State was certainly better at that point than they ended up being. Doesn't mean you should have given up 36 consecutive points and lost. But, yeah, I mean, they didn't. Did you leave that game thinking, man, Michigan State's probably going to win about 3 or 4 games this season? It didn't seem like
no,
that at all,
no.
Of course.
Michigan State only has one more win.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
It's Rutgers.
But, so, you know, if you're looking that over, one team definitely better than you, and it's on the road.
And you went 4-8.
And you went 4-8. And there's some wins, and there's some games you could not have lost. And you know what? You lost one of them. Nevada, Duke, Syracuse, and Army. You couldn't physically lose the game. And you lost one. So that's bad, too. And then, as I said, they got to clear up this road thing, man. I mean, 3-2 on the road last year was considered great versus 0-3 and 0-3 bookending it. It's just, they got to be able to win on the road in these with 5 road games coming up. So they should have been better than, I mean, 8-4 is a great call, I think. At least 8-4, right?
They should have been at least 8-4.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying, like, they should have been at least, but you could still be disappointed if they were.
Yes.
Right, yes.
You'd be like,
yes.
Well, okay, fine, 8-4, I guess.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be having these, Jack Swarbrick wouldn't be doing a podcast defending Brian Kelly after
8-4
season. Next up, ZC727. Hey guys, I'm trying to get excited for next season, but I just don't see how a 4-win team turns into a 9 or a 10-win team. Is it unrealistic to expect 9+ wins, or do you see that as a real possibility?
How many teams was it, Pete, for Notre Dame that won?
I think it was like 2.
5 more games?
But there are so few.
So 4 more games
makes
sense.
There's so few
yeah.
7 loss or more teams.
Right.
That there just have not been opportunities for that to happen.
Yeah, Charlie Weiss's 2018 won 4 more games without blinking.
Yeah.
So I think had they won 6 more games, that would have been a really good year.
That's a off-season project for me is to go through, you know, the last few years to see how many Power 5 teams actually did that. You know, go 3-9 all the way up to 8-4, or take 4-8 and go.
Yeah, every 5
there aren't
win
that many,
below.
But Notre Dame won 10 games last year, so I think it's a different program. They're not a team that hardly ever loses 7 or 8 games in a season. I don't know. Use your imagination a little bit. You lost by 3 to Texas, Michigan State by 8, Duke
by
3.
Whoa, they just hired Dave Aranda.
NC State by 7, Stanford by 7, Navy by 1, Virginia Tech by 3. Have one more scoring drive and eliminate one more scoring drive by the opponent. I'm sounding like Brian Kelly, our head coach now, that loses a lot of close games.
Tim, you've been podcasting for the last 27 years.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not, score-wise, they're not that far away. Fundamentally, technique-wise, et cetera, maybe they're further away.
We have no idea how a schedule is going to play out 12 months in advance, but the dynamics of a 5 true road game schedule Yeah, more a lot more difficult than the last year was. I agree.
Just the name of the teams, I think, are so a lot
Miami,
more difficult.
Miami of all, if what if Mike Elko doesn't leave Wake Forest for Notre Dame? Wake Forest might not have Mike Elko, but you would think if he's leaving for a higher job, that Notre Dame would be high on his list of places to go, right?
What's the record going to be after the first four games?
I'm telling you right now, look at this. You have Temple, which you literally cannot lose to Matt Rhule if you're Brian Kelly right now at home to start the season.
It wouldn't matter who they were playing. That would apply.
You're right.
But it really applies in this situation.
They have four losable.
They do.
First four games, which never happens to any program. It's because Temple trended up. They probably won't lose at DC, but I mean, that's when that's your easiest game. It's a road game against a defense that's always good.
I know.
And then I don't know what Chuck Martin has coming back.
Well, you got Michigan State in there.
That's the fourth.
Okay.
That's the fourth.
You gotta go to Michigan State.
Your next four games are Chuck Martin and Malik Zaire, we decided, at North Carolina, but it's a true road game. I mean, literally, NC State and Wake Forest at home are the best-looking games on this, and they're not terrible. Well, if they lose to NC State and South Bend, I can go ahead and tell you what's going to happen at the end of that year. But, I mean, five road games, and they don't have as easy games as they had last year. There's no Army, there's no Nevada. I am of Ohio's your worst opponent. Now, they might have, I didn't follow them enough to know if they're losing.
Their quarterback's coming back.
He's letting me breathe too.
And what are the last four games?
Home against Wake Forest, at Miami.
Yeah, Miami.
Senior day against Navy, which should be a real treat. And Stanford. Senior day against Navy. Holy smokes. Who made that schedule? Senior day against Navy. Okay. That's just the wrong team to play right there.
But Navy loses Will Worth, so.
That's right.
After losing Tiger Smith, after losing Keenan Reynolds.
So that's a rough schedule next year. So do I think they would win nine games? I think it's hard to win nine games. But we could put Brian Kelly's kind of theory to the test where he kind of felt that they got off to a better start this past year. This was in retrospect, too. This was 2 months in when I asked him. He couldn't have seen this coming. I think they were 2-5. He knew they could be in trouble if they lost early because they didn't have enough confidence and he thought they needed to build it. So maybe if you start 2-0, you're not so worried about going to BC. Because if you're 1-1 going to BC after two home games, it's a little bit scary.
It's going to be a very difficult schedule to manage in terms of, like, he uses the term outside noise, but that is going to be freaking real next year. Because if that first loss hits and we're not in before October, everything from there on out is like, okay, is that the one? Is this the week? Okay, they got it, but is next week the week where you just wonder that's just going to be a real challenge, I think, for the program to manage the expectations of, like, is this coach coming back or, like, is this the loss that sends it over the edge?
Three of the first five rounds are true road games. Sorry, three of the first.
Man,
six.
That's going to be tough.
Let's go with
the answer's no.
Buffalo Irish one. What is your projected starting lineup on defense next year? I think much depends upon, I mean, if Mike Elko's your coordinator, it's a 3-4. If Bo Pelini's your defensive
Let's
coordinator.
Let's say it's Mike Elston for this one. Let's say it's Mike Elston's the defensive coordinator for this answer. And let's bring Daniel Cage back.
I would say Cage and Tillery. I'd probably bump Hayes over to where Rochelle is. I guess is kind of where he works the second half of the season. Yeah, Jay Hayes. Dalen Hayes starts at the opposite side.
So you have Bonner.
Competing with Trombetti.
And you have Bonner and Trombetti as your two best reserves.
I have
Khalid Kareem.
Okay. Yeah.
Coney and Morgan are your inside linebackers. Martini's your outside linebacker.
Yeah, I think that's a gimme.
Tranquil and Studstill are your starting safeties. And then Love and Pride / Vaughn, depending on the matchup, for your corners.
Crawford also.
I say he's not quite back to start. Was it start of the year?
Yeah, I'm curious to see where. I mean,
end of the year.
Crawford is physically.
Torn Achilles is rough, you know.
It is, but I mean, everybody's different. Yeah, you know? that's a smaller athlete. I think that's easier to come back from. I don't know. In this day and age, I expect everybody to bounce back.
Those would be the
more
two biggest,
quickly than they used to.
Those are the two biggest gamers you
That's
can have.
That's a rough
corner.
One, though. I mean, Love ACL it. Used to be, and it still is, of course, but guys are kind of, look at Tranquil, how he came back from ACL. Two of them.
He played with one somehow.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, you don't hear Achilles much, so you don't know.
I would actually go Jalen Elliott.
Over
Devin Studstill.
Hmm. Okay.
That's my only tweak to that whole. Okay. In the current scheme, you know, it's hard to speculate what it would be if it's a different scheme, but that would be my one tweak to that one. Terry Benedict, how many Notre Dame players will get drafted this year? Your annual conversation.
Yeah, and I am set to speak with Greg Gabriel on Tuesday. If you go back to October 21st, when we did our first installment of the draft during the bye week, you know, DeShone Kizer obviously is an early pick, the first pick among Notre Dame players. You know, then a lot of it's going to come down to all-star games and how you show and
who comes out
combine. Well, I mean, we know Isaac Rochelle, Jerron Jones, James Onwalu, Cole Luke are in there. Those are definite, you know, guys that are out of eligibility. Quentin Nelson, does he come out?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more a higher likelihood of that than people would realize. I'm not saying that it's likely, but I just don't think that's a slam dunk that he comes back. And I think we've sort of been treating it as like, well, of course he would come back.
Yeah.
I'm just not so sure that's the case.
And that's the first, if he comes out, he's a first round draft pick, because that's why he's coming out too, as a true junior.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah. You come back otherwise. Yeah.
Torrey Hunter, we think that he's not going to pursue football.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to hear the Hunter Fulston. Because when Notre Dame came out and said, basically, all right, these guys have been granted their release to go elsewhere, I kind of expected Fulston to be one of those guys, just, you know, go somewhere that runs the ball a little bit more. The fact that he's not doesn't necessarily make me think that he's coming back, although maybe he will.
The banquet, you might have a chance to talk to him
on
Friday night.
That could be a possibility.
I think he has to win an award, right?
Yeah, so I don't know about that. But it's, I don't know where those guys go. But I would tend to think that Hunter may just move on and do something else based on what CJ Sanders indicated on social media that, hey, it's been great playing with you. I really enjoyed it. But Fulston is, I'm much more curious about that.
So, I mean, to summarize, Kizer is certainly a potential first round pick. I wouldn't think any later than early second round after that.
Rochelle's the next pick.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what round? I mean, we're
third round. Solid player.
Romeo Okwara was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, but that's different position. I like Isaac Rochelle going to the NFL.
Man, I would be surprised if he went that early. Okay, well now you're hedging your bet.
Yeah, I'll drop down to fourth round. I just
but you know, I mean, I think somebody picks Jerron Jones just because.
Yeah, I think
big
so too.
Body, although if yes. he goes to.
Yeah. He won't run at the combine.
He won't run. He probably won't interview. Great.
He's really intelligent. He could interview.
No, I'm not saying.
But I'm saying that will help you interview sometimes. You know.
Yeah, I guess Onwalu is probably is really intriguing.
It doesn't matter where he gets drafted, because he, if he wants to, has 10 years of special teams.
Yeah.
In the NFL,
and Gabriel talks about the combination safety / outside linebacker.
I like the outside linebacker
it's a hybrid position. Oh, yeah. What he's saying is a guy that plays outside linebacker that's more. Safety size, which is kind of in his realm there.
I wonder what Cole Luke will run.
Probably not well. And as Gabriel always says, it's a stopwatch driven position, and I don't expect him to run in the 4.4s.
Yeah. So
he won't run in the 4.4s.
It will certainly be a very large backtrack from last year's seven draft picks and all seven of them.
It was
going
a busy draft
in the four round
day and leading up to it.
2 years ago
that
Pete volunteered to cover the draft if we would do last year's the Koyak draft. I got this one. I got this draft.
Somehow I got roped into covering the last day of the draft waiting for Farley and Okwara. I'm just like, I cannot believe I spent an entire day on this.
All right, we've got Irish Bob. What is your take on social media funding billboards or newspaper ads to vent their frustration over Brian Kelly?
I mean, nothing says get with the times more than a newspaper ad. So there, that's my thought on that.
I mean, what are you doing? What's the point? Seriously? That's going to do something? Hey, I'm mad. All right. That's great. Thanks for being mad. You know, there's a lot of people mad out there.
We just had the most contentious, vicious presidential election in the history of our country. We're boycotting. We're in that mode now.
What's the point?
I don't want to say anything further because I'm going to offend people.
I think as O'Malley has pointed out and written, the opposite of love is not hate; it's an indifference. And this is clearly hate. This is Notre Dame, as Jack Swarbrick noted in his podcast, was like, "Hey, look, we appreciate the passion," and they do. What would really bother Notre Dame is if you stopped going to games, right, or turned off the TV or stopped giving money. Like, that would be more of an issue. The fact that you're fired up and want to put a billboard up or take an ad out in the Observer, like, that's not really going
to do a whole lot. By no means am I a bleeding heart liberal, but give your money to somebody that needs it. I went into a 7-Eleven yesterday, and the woman there is losing her job because they're closing the 7-Eleven. How often does 7-Elevens close?
Yeah. Where is? Which one? People really want to know this.
Yeah, right, by St. Matt's on Miami Street.
Oh, man, that's been there forever.
I know.
I went to St. Matt's, you know.
Sandra at the 7-Eleven on Miami Street in South Bend could really use your money more than, you know, the billboard and the ad in the South Bend Tribune.
All right, last question from Irish Mike. He wants to know, what's the latest with Notre Dame recruiting now that official visits and in-home visits are happening? And it's just to wrap up on
big
that.
Big weekend coming up here.
Yeah, big weekend coming up. And I think the day after our last podcast was when Pete Werner decommitted. That was a bit of a blow for Notre Dame. They really liked him a lot. Linebacker out of Cathedral High School. I mean, it's tough when you lose guys from Catholic schools in Indiana. That should be a firewall for Notre Dame.
There's a lot going on when I forgot about that.
What's the truth behind as somebody with bad hips? What's the truth behind
that?
His
I don't
hip
know.
Situation.
All I can tell you is that Notre Dame really wanted him. Whatever.
He's good.
Yeah, they liked him a lot. Hips. No hips, whatever. They thought he was a take.
Notre Dame defense 2017.
Hips or no hips. Visited Ohio State for the Michigan game, came back, told Notre Dame he wanted to then do an official visit to Ohio State later. At that point, Notre Dame was like, okay, so you're not really committed. He's like, I'm not. So he's off the board. A guy that is new to the board is Antoine Simmons, who was a linebacker who was committed to Ohio State, is now looking around. Notre Dame already has done an in-home visit with him via Keith Gilmore. I would expect him to get to South Bend sometime very soon. And I think that would be, in some ways, a like-for-like replacement for them. But in terms of Notre Dame's linebacker board without Werner, I'm told they're not going to make sort of Plan B offers or really dip down the board there.
Good.
They like the two that they have, and they feel like they have a lot of guys that can move to the position if they need to. I think Spencer Perry and DJ Morgan would be pretty high up that list. So overall, I think Notre Dame feels like it can live without Pete Werner, but that's not to say they didn't want him in the class. They liked him a lot.
he's a good football player, but they're in a pretty good position with their linebackers, and their linebackers were good this year, and they'll be good next year, even better.
Yeah, and I mean, that sort of, you spin it forward to this weekend's the Echoes Award show. Josh Pascal is the guy, defensive end out of Maryland. We had him highlighted in our insider report last week. I caught up with his head coach there. Pascal described him in similar terms to Sam Mustafer in terms of personality. Just has his stuff together. Really nice, respectful kid. Would be a good fit at Notre Dame. Sort of Oklahoma feels good about their position there. Ohio State's hanging around. I'm not sure how much of a
push. His brother went to Kentucky.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
No, I understand. And Maryland's in that too. I did do a film review on him today, and I think he's a guy that, you know, I list him as a tweener. Usually when I say a tweener, that's a negative thing. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, I don't think it is, because he's, you know, he's listed at 6'4", but he's also listed at 6'2.5", and he looks, you know, to be that size. So he's tough enough and quick enough and strong enough. I could see him as a three technique, but I also think that he rushes the passer well enough to be a good college strong side defensive end with more pass rush ability than Rochelle.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're hoping there, is like he can be a little bit better version of Isaac Rochelle in terms of quickness off the edge. I think one thing that about his skill set that I really like, one's a basketball player, and they play him at wide receiver in the red zone.
Yeah.
That's usually a good sign about how quick your feet are.
He is tough, and his get-off is outstanding.
Yeah, he competed at the opening over the summer, so he's that level of prospect. That's good. Notre Dame's going to have a few more other guys coming in this weekend. Oliver Martin, a receiver from Iowa, is coming in. And then basically almost the entire commitment class will be there too. So overall, Notre Dame's sitting there at 17 prospects. originally. They hope to get into the low 20s. I think that's pretty unrealistic now. If they could get to 20, but not dip down their board more than they were comfortable with, I think they would take that. Because you look at their numbers overall, even if you subtract Holmes, Zaire, Montelis, and then make some hard cuts with like a project a Kaiser to leave, maybe even a Nelson or a
Hunters.
Hunters. It's not like they have a ton of room. So if they can get 20 quality guys, I think they would consider that to be a really good class.
Get to 88. It's the goal, right?
Yeah.
Post-signing day.
Be three over on signing day every year.
Yeah, you're in good shape.
A healthy place to be. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll be back on December 12th, Monday, to wrap the Echoes, to wrap any potential coaching changes, and obviously recruiting moves, as inevitably something will happen tomorrow after this podcast is posted. So until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.